This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Just coming up to 5:05 in the evening, and there of course has been a lot of discussion recently, not least on our show, about Malaysia's decision not to allow Israeli athletes into the country to participate in the 2019 World Para Swimming Championships. I mean, our Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad even went so far as to draw comparison to President Trump and his border wall, and here's the Prime Minister reiterating his stance at the Oxford Union recently.
Well, we can't do very much about the Israeli government. They are very powerful. So we don't say anything about the Israeli government, but we don't have to show friendship towards them. If they want to come to our country, we have borders which we guard to allow only people whom we like to come to Malaysia. But the people who have done a lot of wrong things, if we consider them as unfit to visit Malaysia, that is our right.
Well, it's all come to a head now, as over the weekend, the International Paralympic Committee, or IPC, stripped Malaysia of the right to host the championships that were going to be held in Sarawak this July. The IPC said that when it signed a contract with Malaysia, it was assured that all eligible athletes would be allowed to participate.
Their statement went on to say that the Pakatan Harapan government has different ideas, so they basically alluded to that change in government, and that the exclusion of Israeli athletes left the IPC with no choice but to look for a different host.
IPC President Andrew Parsons said that this emphasised more than ever the need for politics and sports to remain separate. When we last chatted about this, we made the point that keeping these two things apart seems to be, well, increasingly difficult, perhaps even impossible. Our guest at the time, Harish Deol, had this to say.
You know, everyone will say that sports and politics should never be together and stuff like that, but that's a very simplistic a view, because you and I and the whole world out there knows that sports and politics will sadly mix. It's something that cannot be separated. It will always be there. We've seen instances in the past whereby political ideologies often clash and you know, sports made to suffer. So it's sad, but it's something that we've just got to live with until and unless someone has got the courage to say, hey, no, when it comes to sports, we have to believe in the sports ideology instead of any political ideology to begin with.
So I suppose IPC President Andrew Parsons is in fact trying to say this, that it does need to be separated. Mm. But I can't help but feel that he's being unrealistic. And I think to that point Harish made about, you know, who is going to be the person who stands up and says, look, this is unacceptable. I think even if that person were to do it, the way that the sporting world is set up now and the kind of attention that is given to it, the kind of pull and cachet that it comes with, and here I'm not necessarily just talking about the Paralympics or the Olympics, but just in general, it's a world of money and influence. It's not just a world of pure sporting achievement. And in that sense, I think that we're already seeing politics and sports mix. I don't think it's ever going to untangle again.
No, and there is no way it could, because if you just look locally, the example is that the amount of influence that our athletes, even by to extend that, it goes to our celebrities as well. Athletes and celebrities like Lee Chong Wei have sway, have influence, and we see that whenever elections come by, politicians will engage with him to get his support and his backing.
That's the thing. And in this case, I mean, we're using politics quite loosely here, right? Where we're talking about a variety of different things. I mean, if you look at the United States, for example, and what they're going through with the NFL, you see that there. In this case, of course, it's an actual diplomatic thing where you say, look, we have no ties with this country. We don't support what their government is doing. Therefore, we don't accept their citizens. And I suppose the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is that we're seeing it work at all these different levels. You know, you have it on a personal political level, and then you have it on a political campaigning level, and then you have it on a diplomatic level. And the way I see it is that this just kind of came to this impossible situation where the IPC cannot possibly allow this to happen, but Malaysia also just refused point blank to permit the entry of the athletes. So we were at an impasse.
Yeah, but I think also to be fair, right here again, when we talked about this story last week, is that it's also I guess, unfairly applied, because here we're applying to Israel, who actively, you know, oppresses and suppresses the Muslim population in Palestine, the Palestinians. But then we also have China and Myanmar in the picture, and we still actively engage with them. Sure, Israel is a powerful nation, but are they in this equation and its proximity to us, are they weakest when compared to the likes of Myanmar and China, where we hold so much trade with China? Upsetting them would have a lot more consequences than upsetting the likes of Israel.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that it is a comparison that has been made also. Mm. And I think it's a very valid one, because if you are going to say, look, we reject you because of these crimes, then you are going to have to extend it to other countries that are also oppressing their minority populations. And in the cases of both China and Myanmar, these are minority populations that are Muslim populations. So, yeah, it's not applied equally. And that, I guess, is just... It is a situation that really, I think, could not have gone any other way. Now that it's ended, I think you look at it and you go, yep, yeah, that seems about right.
This was the right conclusion, I guess.
Well, it was the only one, I think. And now for our next story, which has a bit more of a feel-good factor.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
No.
I could help you cross the street.
No.
I could help you cross your yard.
No.
I could help you cross your porch.
No.
Well, I gotta help you cross something.
No, I'm doing fine.
Now, when was the last time you took some time during a weekend or an off day to volunteer? Take a moment and think about it. And in the meantime, let me tell you why I'm asking. Deputy Prime Minister Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Azizah Wan Ismail is encouraging both young people and retirees alike to volunteer at hospitals and other similar organizations.
So I think the spirit here is rather similar to the excursions that we had as kids, where we go to old folks' homes, hospitals, orphanages. The aim has always been to bring some cheer and social connection to places with vulnerable populations. I mean, it used to be that we would go with donations, right? Usually food and things like that. But I think the reason why they always wanted people to go and not just, you know, pack a van with a bunch of boxes of Milo and biscuits and, you know, things like that and send it off is because you want people to go and actually forge connections, speak with, have conversations with people who perhaps, you know, might be, like I said, a bit more vulnerable, people who don't have as much social interaction as people who are still working, for example, or still kind of just operating.
So, you know, it's not all on the people hoping to volunteer, though. Dr. Wan Azizah went on to say that she hoped that relevant parties, namely the hospitals and other organizations, would provide support for volunteers to enter these spaces and carry out their efforts. If you're looking for motivation to start volunteering, here's Dutch volunteer Joyce Bertram, and here she explains that how you can start thinking about your own volunteer project.
We might have all heard people say this, and we might have said it ourselves from time to time, which is, why is nobody doing this? Why is this not a project? I wish someone would take this thing that I care about and turns it into something that I could contribute to. And now, in the community that I'm a part of, we have a pretty simple answer to that. I can't wait to see you do it. And actually, when you consider it, it is that simple. If you come across something that sparks something in you, that sparks a passion, that fills you with excitement that you feel should happen, don't wait for others to take the initiative. Step up and do it. And now, in this current society, it's really easy to think at that moment, like, my project will not be able to generate a profit, or I won't be able to pay people for contributing to what I want to do. And now, if we take this commercial idea away from it, what you are left with is a volunteerism project.
So, have you volunteered before?
Yeah, it started with, you know, having it be part of college activities, because I think when I joined Methodist College, for example, they make it compulsory for each student to volunteer about, if I'm not mistaken, 10 or 20 hours for one whole semester or the whole time you're there. So my experience kind of started from there, and then it evolved to me getting involved in pet shelters,
Yeah. I actually also spent my time working with pet shelters, specifically Furry Friends Farm. And I did that for every weekend almost for close to a year. And I look back on it with real fondness, but I also look back on it with no small amount of guilt because I stopped. And the reason why I stopped is because I think ultimately... It can be quite difficult to sustain a long-term volunteer project, partly because your flexibility changes, right? Yeah. Your life changes, your flexibility changes, but also because sometimes the emotional output of it can be kind of heavy. I think overall, though, this is an excellent thing to do, to say like, hey, guys, maybe it would be a good thing to encourage more people to be going into, Dr. Wan Aziza mentioned specifically hospitals, but there are also other places that would be good. I hope that since she's putting it out specifically to the young and the retired, that they're also going to look into transportation issues, because I think sometimes in both of these groups, that might be something that might be a little bit of a block.
Yeah, the reason I stopped was because I didn't have anyone else to go with. I think after my friend, it's because we did it as a group thing. So when that stopped, I also just stopped volunteering. And I think it really just took up a lot of energy. And, you know, it's not supposed to be about you, but the problem for me that I found was that I wasn't, for some of the places that I volunteered in, I really couldn't see the direct impact of what I was doing. And that's not always necessary, right? Because you might be chiming in or volunteering in aspects that they need help with but don't necessarily have the largest impact, right? Like sticking stamps on these letters or pamphlets that are about to send out to get donations. So that might be something that is just one small step to something that will help them greatly. But because I couldn't see it, I guess, I felt like, oh, well, I'm not really contributing much here.
You couldn't find that sort of personal fulfillment. I do think that is somewhat... that is important in maintaining it, right? Because I have heard from people working in NGOs, working within these spaces, that when it comes to volunteering, consistency is the most important. You get people kind of entering really enthusiastic, and then after that, it just kind of peters out because, like you said, sometimes you're not performing maybe the most exciting of activities. You don't see immediately how it impacts people. I think having the mindset of showing up week on week, that is a tough one. We'd love to hear from you. I mean, do you volunteer? Have you volunteered? Would you like to share your experiences with us? We'd love to hear about them. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be taking a look at esports right after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We were speaking earlier about the fact that Malaysia has now been stripped of hosting the World Paraswimming Championships because we refused to allow Israeli athletes entry into the country. We also talked about volunteering because our Deputy Prime Minister is calling for more people to participate. We'd love to hear about your experiences. Do you volunteer? Do you find it hard to do so? We want to hear about them. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. eMacro says, good, now Malaysia will never host the Olympics.
I actually think that's a good side effect of this because overall hosting the Olympics hasn't shown to be of great value to a nation. If anything, what it does is it could put a nation into debt, as we've seen in Brazil, where they have infrastructures they built specifically for the Olympics, but then now it's collecting dust.
They're really ghost stadiums at this point. If you get a chance to look at some photo essays that I think people have done of those ghost stadiums, they're actually quite beautiful and haunting, but it is also haunting because of the waste of money. I don't necessarily agree that there is no value. I think that there is soft power value. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's quantifiable necessarily. You also see that big boost in terms of tourism. And I think in the case of somewhere like Beijing, where when they hosted the Olympics, they kind of accelerated a lot of infrastructure, accelerated a lot of renovation around the city that I think tourists after and residents within the city could enjoy. I agree that if you have to build a lot it's not necessarily something that you're going to use, it's different. Who doesn't want all of Malaysia's public toilets to get an overhaul? Except for the one in Rantau Abang, which is amazing, apparently. I think that there are benefits.
I have to look that up, I think.
But I agree that on the when you look at it just straight up, it doesn't exactly look like a golden opportunity. And then Aziz from Bukit Jalil says, regarding the matter of Israel not participating if Malaysia's hosting, it's also because the security of the athletes can't be assured. When it comes to the public, the majority of the people in Malaysia are sympathetic to the Palestinians, including me. There are many politically driven decisions made before with regards to Russian athletes and other matters.
The security point was interesting because I think our guest Harish last week also brought up the fact that I think there was a famous footballer, a famous Israeli footballer that was linked to a UK football team. He came and he got jeered at when he was at a stadium or something, and we had to apologise for this behaviour by Malaysians.
Yeah. And on the subject of volunteering, Yasmin says, I volunteer almost every weekend and I've been at this for close to a decade. I do it because I want to contribute. Sometimes these small insignificant contributions open up a whole world to me. I meet new people, heighten my awareness and perspectives and be more whole. But to expect one volunteering activity to show you big impact immediately, as what Calvin said earlier, that's not why you volunteer. You volunteer to be selfless and do your small bit to create a collective impact. Millennials who volunteer, and I get a lot of volunteers in my organization, they expect almost instant gratification. Some insists on cash allowances. This, I feel, is not the true value of volunteerism.
Oh, no. Point taken, definitely, that one volunteering activity is not going to fulfill you immediately. But and maybe it might just take a lot more time of doing it. And the problem there was that I didn't quite factor in the fact that I needed to put in the consistency, put in the discipline, put in the time, regardless of whether I was passionate about it or not. Because this, I think, would be doing good is probably like going to the gym. You do it because it's good.
I think also you do it because you believe in the cause of the organization.
Yeah.
Because if you believe in the organization that you're working for, then you know that the tasks that you're doing lead towards that organization being able to fulfill what you believe in. And I think that's where you see the value, if that's what you need from it. And I do think that selflessness, while it's a good thing, it's a good side effect of all of it, I don't know if it's the only reasonable way to expect people to begin volunteering. I do think that a lot of people volunteer because they need something from it. And how you get there is, you know, is your own lookout,
yeah.
But it is an important part of it. Do let us know what you think. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Dylan says, why must athletes suffer for the wrongdoings of their government? And I agree. I think that we covered that last week as well, that there is a bit of a conflating happening where we disagree with the government, but now we're saying nobody can enter. But I think Aziz also made a good point regarding safety.
Yeah, we can't guarantee the safety here, unfortunately.
Yes. Our next story, though, takes a look at sports that can kind of be done anywhere. It's about esports and competitive gaming.
I want to stress that esports is the future. Sebab, if you think about it, jangan ingat pasal gaming. Think about the ancillary industries. You create software engineers, developers. It's a gaming developing industry, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. Think about job creation and opportunities, you know. Players, trainers, advertisement, revenue. You look at Dota, hundreds of thousands of people watch people playing Dota. The advertisement revenue is ridiculous.
That was YB Syed Saddiq, the Minister of Youth and Sports, who is all into finding and, I guess, developing Malaysia as the next big esports country that hosts championships and gamers and stuff like that. So in Budget 2019, 10 million ringgit was allocated for the development of esports. This is all in line with the huge surge of popularity and legitimacy that esports is seeing in other parts of the world.
Now, to be clear, it's gotten so popular that since 2017, the International Olympic Committee has been exploring the possibilities of esports being an Olympic event. At the moment, they're working on making esports an exhibition event at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. That's, I think, the perfect venue for it, actually. And esports will also be one of the events at the next SEA Games. That's happening in the Philippines in November. John Pan, the product marketing lead at Amazon Game Studios, shared some factors that are driving this exponential growth in the esports industry.
There are more than 30 sports organizations globally. These sports organizations and their billionaire team owners are getting involved with esports because they know that there are more people watching and playing esports than ever before. And one reason why is because it is becoming very expensive. Up to 10.5% of a family's gross income could be spent on sports. So for a typical family earning the median income in America, they could be spending up to $5,800. Besides financial considerations, esports is actually taken away from sports viewership and participation. In this study conducted by Newzoo, 76% of esports enthusiasts say that the time they spend watching esports is taking away from the time they would spend watching sports. And that makes a lot of sense because younger generations are growing up in front of computers and other devices. When we compare the Super Bowl, which is one of the largest sporting events in the world, with the League of Legends World Championship, which is the biggest esports event in the world, the numbers are amazing. You know, 43 million people, unique viewers, watched the League of Legends finals compared to less than 5 million for the Super Bowl. And it's not just about watching main tournaments. On one platform, Twitch, there are over 100 million people who tune in every month to watch their favorite players and influencers practice and play. So a Korean player named Faker, who is often called the Michael Jordan of esports, his opponents and his fans alike call him God. Last month, 245,000 people tuned in to watch God practice. That's like saying for your favorite athlete, whether it's a football player or a basketball player, you'll rather watch him or her practice than compete against an actual team. Newzoo estimates that there are 385 million people who will watch esports this year. That number will grow to 589 million by 2020.
Those are some pretty crazy numbers. Now, according to the Malaysian Digital Economy Corporation, MDEC, the esports industry is estimated to be worth 742 billion ringgit, and Malaysia definitely wants a piece of that pie. The sports ministry is looking to identify more esports athletes from the grassroots level so that they can develop a sustainable pool of talent. It's estimated that Malaysia has more than 2 million esports enthusiasts.
Now, it's interesting that this is happening because increasing attention is being placed on internet and gaming addiction. I mean, we hear from, for example, clinical psychologist Joe Low of the Mind saying that gaming has caused some individuals to experience various mental health disorders, like a dependency on the games, their withdrawals. We've heard also from self-confessed former gaming addicts saying that the money that you might win from tournaments is actually going to serve to exacerbate the problem because then you have a situation where you can pass off what might be increasingly unhealthy habits as, no, I'm training, I'm going to make money. This is going to be a good way to go about things. And having said that, those within the industry do say that measures are being taken to prevent addiction from becoming a threat.
So Rini Ramli, the Secretary General of Esports Malaysia, says that they advocate responsible gaming and practices such as healthy diets, exercise, scheduled gaming and purposeful training. She explained that both gamers and parents need to be aware that there are games designed to hook one into addiction with frequent and immediate rewards and never-ending gameplay. According to her, environment plays a huge role, so players are encouraged to practice with a group of like-minded friends or in a professional team.
So here's the thing for me. No matter how hard I try, I can't seem to get on board regarding esports and sports as the same thing. I'm not saying that there isn't any skill involved with esports. I'm not saying that there isn't good money involved in it. For me, as far as I can tell, the training process is so different. The benefits of it also seem quite different. So they need to be regarded as kind of separate things. And also, the thing about addiction is it's hard, right? Because these habits that would be considered addiction or addictive habits or kind of looking in that direction are also the habits you would need to be a truly dedicated elite esports person. So I'm not sure how to go about things. Let us know what you think. Do you think that esports is really going to be the next big thing in the Malaysian sports landscape? Let us know. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.